Weekend Breakfast
with Refilwe Mpakanyane
on 702 for the curious.
9:38, it's the final 22 minutes of the Weekend Breakfast on this Saturday morning. And of course, at this time of the show, we talk all things literary and books with literary journalist Karabo Kholeng. As I head on over into that conversation with Karabo, and you're more than welcome to call in on 011-883-0702 and to give us your thoughts, your opinion, your input, you know, chime in, talk to us. I'm also keen to hear from you what is on your COVID reading list, because I'm sure you have one, those books that have been sitting on the nightstand and gathering dust, or perhaps you've just decided, you know what, I'm picking up that book that I sort of started, got halfway through, but it's now time for me to complete the task. And maybe there's just that thing that you've been too busy to actually start reading, and today's a great day to start. So what's on your COVID-19 lockdown reading list? I want to hear from you, and what are you particularly enjoying? I've been having lots of fun reading in tandem with my child. So lots, you know, essentially if you set up a challenge just the right way in a child's mind, I'll tell you what, completing a book or two a day is nothing, provided of course that you get the right incentive. And it might be sweets in your case, it might just be money to buy whatever electronic device they've had their eye on. But yeah, competition never ever hurt the little ones. So on that note, Karabo Kholeng, good morning, always a pleasure.
Good morning, Refilwe, and yes, a co-ask from my end. I'd love to know what everybody else is reading as well. And it's a great plan to also read with your child. You know, I'm in isolation, and I'm not with my child. She's with her dad, so yeah. It's one of the things that you get to bond over. Like, how are you finding this one? And we're both reading Gabrielle Union's We're Going to Need More Wine.
Oh, yes. Talk to me about that. I mean, I don't want to mess up your plans of another review, but just tell me so far, you know, how you're enjoying it.
Well, you know, she recommended it to me because she's part of my, you know, sometimes you need to shamelessly use your own family for research. And the young adults are a very interesting crowd because we make assumptions that we know about their world and how they view ours.
Yeah.
So it's always very interesting to think about, you know, who they look up to aside from us, because they're starting to realize that we're not perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nice to see, you know, which other sort of well-known personalities, especially women in our particular case, that they find interesting. Now, Gabrielle Union's story is very it's fascinating because she's had the run of the mill with Hollywood, you know, really establishing her place and insisting on living authentically. You know, she's been kicked out of reality talent shows because of how she chooses to express herself, and also
because of how she won't accept being treated badly. Period.
Yes, yeah. Being treated badly, being paid less, and also her and her husband, how they've worked through the process of their child being transgendered, you know, and how younger people, you know, experience the world in terms of, you know, the gender rainbow and how they locate themselves and their thoughts on how we look at it as people that they look up to. So it's an interesting journey.
Yeah.
It's not a book that I would have picked, you know, immediately, especially, you know, in terms of working as a literary journalist. It's more sort of popular writing.
Exactly,
but I adore Gabrielle Union, and I'm really enjoying this process of reading this book with my little one. So I'll keep you posted once it's done. We're pacing ourselves because school is back on. So it's school online. So we don't take it for granted that we need to keep the day, you know, we need to keep to a specific routine. So it's like a weekend hangout read instead of, you know, chilling together.
That's so cool.
We do it, you know, online. Yeah.
That's really, really
such
cool.
An experience.
And it really is a fantastic experience. And, you know, you just reminded me of just a really, really important part of my own childhood, which was reading and getting book recommendations from my older sisters, right? So, or they'd be reading their book, and from time to time there'd be a chuckle, then someone would read a paragraph or two, and then you'd be like, okay, now I'm definitely going to read that book. But it's such an amazing bonding tool, and such a lovely way to sort of socialize each other into where we are in our specific places in life. So I might have been reading Charlotte's Web, but my sister, who's 5 years older than me, I'd sort of, you know, sneak in the Sweet Valley Highs as well. So it is a very interesting way of sharing and building a community.
Yeah, our big sisters are absolute best. And it comes with my older sister, it was her makeup kit and her library. She raids the heck out of those.
So very important.
I'm very grateful for that.
Yeah, so, I'm glad you're having that experience with your daughter as well. So Karabo, today we're talking Bessie Head. And specifically The Cardinals by Bessie Head. But tell us about this. How do you describe Bessie Head except as an elder of Southern African writing, someone who was singular in her approach to how she'd live her life and carve and find an identity for herself and for her writing? What a nuanced, an amazing character, woman, and writer and artist.
Yeah, Bessie Head's biography, first of all, I've never settled into it. It still gives me the chills every time I think back to her origin story, right?
Mm.
She was born to a wealthy family of Scottish descent in the Ben-Natal province. Her mom was Bessie, her mother was Amelia Emery, right? And she lived on this estate, and she had a baby with a black man who was a groom on this estate. And she was certified insane, so she gave birth to her daughter Bessie in an asylum.
Mm.
And because it was during the Immorality Act, Bessie was taken away from her. And she lived in various institutions for orphaned children. Mm. And then she was fostered by a colored family. She was classified as mixed race. And then she was fostered by then known as colored family, the Heathcotes. And when her adoptive mother passed away, that's when she was informed that, her father passed away. She was informed that, look, you know what? We are not your family. You've got these horrendous roots. And you can imagine that kind of childhood trauma kind of set you off into a place of incredible mental illness and dysfunction and not knowing yourself and, feeling displaced even in your soul in terms of your identity in the South Africa of that time. So as it happens with many, many creative people, I mean, I've been, watching documentaries on Nina Simone and women like Maya Angelou and all kinds of creative people, is that the one thing that incredibly gifted creative people have in common is this childhood trauma, and how they tap into their souls and start producing this amazing work as part of a healing process. And if they don't heal, it's how they process, right? Yeah. And with Bessie Head's life story is that she processed, but she didn't quite heal because she died of alcohol abuse-related complications. After she had moved to Botswana, she sought refuge there in Seroe, which is the village where Sisira Takama and then come from. So it's also, it's almost as if the wealth and royalty was almost her birthright, irrespective of where her roots came from. It's almost as if royalty attracted her. And I suppose royalty also provides patronage for artists.
Yeah.
So, it's ironic, but it kind of makes sense because she was given that freedom and that leeway to, explore her creativity. And she wrote some seminal novels, Maru, When Green Clouds Gather, and a whole bunch of other works. And I came across, my first interaction with Bessie Head's work was The Collector of Treasures.
Yeah.
I was 10 years old. My family had lived in Botswana for about 3 years. And I'm not sure whether it was in my father's library or whether I picked it up at the state library. Now I know that I was too young to read that collection of short stories. because the title...
tell me about how your young mind interpreted what you read, because it's like quite an interesting thing being a precocious reader and then revisiting things that you were probably too young to really understand at the time.
Yeah, books were banned, but they didn't have age restrictions.
Yes. So
with The Collector of Treasures, one story that stuck with me was about this woman who wakes up and her hair's fallen out. Her head's been shaved and there's hair on her pillowcase. And, there's lots of stories whirling around about witchcraft. And Botswana in those days, late 80s and 90s, because we lived in like a rural village just outside Gaborone, there were always stories of witchcraft abound.
Yeah.
And with, you know, the ideas of sort of modernity and traditional life, particularly in Botswana, being a protectorate, there were elements of, you know, modernity was there in terms of how the country was governed, but a lot of people still believed in witchcraft. Mm. It was expressed even in the church that, yes, we don't, you know, witchcraft is bad. As Christians, we don't believe in it, but it's a social fact. Mm. So don't say that it's not there. You must be wary of it and be aware of it. So it was, you know, it was this kind of dual cosmology that a lot of Black people kind of, you know, lived in and existed within, you know.
I think still do, absolutely.
Yeah, even today in South Africa, I mean, you watch on Twitter, I mean, I remember this one poster, this girl took a picture of a bottle that had some liquid in it and a stick, and a picture, and on the stick, a picture of her was tied to it with a cloth, and she said she found it in her best friend's cupboard. And yeah. She's like, why is a picture of me in this? You know what I mean?
And everyone immediately knew what the implications of that. They were like, ooh, they are putting it for you, girl.
Exactly. And Bessie Head was so avant-garde because she was ahead of her time, because she understood these kinds of dual realities that we exist in. And in The Collective Treasurer, she really brings that out. And when you think of the case, the title short story in that collection, The Collective Treasurer itself, is the story of Dikeledi, who gets taken to jail for manslaughter because she castrates her husband, who is unfaithful, and he bleeds to death.
Mm. Mm, mm.
I shouldn't have read that when I was 10, and I'm really sorry to my younger self, you know.
Yeah.
Like, Garaba, excuse Nana. But there you have it. So with the Cardinals, I picked up this copy at the book dealers a few years ago, and it was such a find at 40 Rand. I love the book dealers. Shout out to all of you. I hope that you stay open after the COVID
absolutely.
Lockdown has ended. Mm. And the Cardinals is basically a novella followed by seven short stories in the sort of latter third of the book. So The Cardinals is a story of a woman. So it's basically kind of plays with her own biography. So she writes a little bit of autofiction.
Yeah, yeah.
So the protagonist in this story is, it's set in Cape Town, and this girl grows up in a squatter camp, right? In an informal settlement. They existed in the 60s, believe it or not.
Yeah.
And what happens is that she grows up with this single woman. She had been brought there by a young woman who had had her out of wedlock, and they'd agreed that she'd be raised there. Which happened a lot in South Africa. When I spoke to Nick last week about Bianca Marais, if you want to make God laugh, it was very common in South Africa of those days that if you were an unwed teenage mother, you'd be sent away to have your baby and give it up and then come back. And in middle-class families, they used to refer to it euphemistically as finishing school.
So in poorer
contexts, the baby would be left with a poor family or a poor barren woman in an economically depressed, you know, environment.
Sure.
So this girl grew up there, and then she escaped being raped, and she ran off to the edge of the street, and then she was picked up, and she managed to, you know, she was taught how to read and write by the local mad drunk, right? So this old man who was a mad drunk and he was the only person who was literate, so he used to write letters on behalf of members of the community in exchange for alcohol to people, you know, to their family members and to their bosses and stuff.
Mm.
So she learned how to read and write from this guy. And then she finds herself a job in a newspaper, which is a sort of a really smutty tabloid, but she's really creative and she's got an imagination, and she starts writing short stories. Now, in this tabloid newspaper, she's the only woman working there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And she's made to write sort of really sort of fluff pieces, but she wants to do something a little bit heavier but more creative. But her boss at the time wants her to follow, you know, to follow the beat, to do sort of reportage. And she doesn't have enough confidence. She's a very quiet girl. She hardly ever speaks, which also reminds you of when Maya Angelou went mute for 5 years.
Yeah,
you know, so there are all these parallels that I keep picking up in African literature of the 60s with what was going on in the creative world in the Black creative America of the same time. You know, so those parallels are really interesting to see, and they're there in The Cardinals. So it's like a newspaper setting, and she has her boss and these her two colleagues who are men. And one of them is in love with her, and he convinces her to move in with him. But he's really cruel towards her. You know, he's always dragging her. He calls her mouse, but then he tells her that he's in love with her, but he wants to groom her at the same time.
Sure.
So the whole book is sort of a study on how, you know, creative women have to deal with, you know, intersectional levels of discrimination and repression and all these unfair circumstances that almost conspire to keep her creativity from coming to fruition, from blooming.
Yeah.
But she does it in spite of that. So it's kind of the setting of like wild Cape Town, of, you know, riots taking place, you know, the way that individuals and the press and creative people subvert the rule of law in order to bring the human story of the oppressed to light. So it's a really charming piece of work. Again, it's being African literature and literature about the oppressed, you know, make sure that you're in a good mental space when you read it and take a break afterwards. Don't get too depressed.
Yeah.
But the craftsmanship is amazing. And then the short stories that follow are basically meditations on rural life and Black life in the context of, you know, Botswana, where she questions the ethical virtues of Botswana being a protectorate, because, you know,
that's a heavy one to take on board, especially during those times.
Especially if you're exiled in Botswana as a South African,
and anyone could turn around and say, "Well, you should be grateful."
Exactly. And she does it through different narrators, right? So she has this one man, it's called a poor man, and he says, you know, the British saying that we're a protectorate are actually being very sly, because they're robbing us of a voice that actively speaks out against how they refuse to see us as human beings.
Mm.
You know, so it's like these short meditations that are really powerful. And she says of one of them that it's called Earth Love, and she says it's the most goddamn best bit of writing she ever did. And I'm just like, what? Nah, I've done better. But, you know, what writers think is their best writing, you know, we all have our different... beauty's in the eye of the beholder.
Yeah, and in this case, the creator.
The same. Mm. Yeah.
Okay, fantastic stuff. There's some homework there to do for yourself, and something to add to your lockdown reading list. You say you picked this up where?
I picked this up at book dealers. So that was way before lockdown. I mean, I had this sitting on my shelf for about 4 or 5 years. I said one day is one day. So that day was happened early this week. Yeah. But you know, you can access, you can find Bessie Head's writing. You can buy it as ebooks online. Unfortunately, all of her work is still, fortunately for her estate, it's still under copyright. So if anyone offers to give it to you for free online, know that you're violating copyright and you are pirating. So
Absolutely. You
have to buy it. Yeah, you have to purchase it.
Yeah, well, thank goodness for ebooks and the advent thereof. I know quite a few people like Open Culture distributing lists of free book titles. And I know that Audible, for instance, has lifted the subscription, right, or paywall for children's books and audio stories. So, you know, there are many, many ways to access literature and to access, you know, amazing stories in this time. Don't feel limited by the fact that you can't go to the library or you can't go to the bookstore.
Yes, definitely. And it is wonderful. You know, it's also a bit of a quagmire, right? Because there is so much out there. You know, you go online, you Google one thing, and you have to deal with 3,562 pages of, you know, the same
author.
Yes, and 1711.
Yeah.
So, you know, in terms of, you know, just migrating our conversation a little bit to how do we access literature online, we do have Audible, and you've got Amazon, and you've got Kindle, and there are special offers. And, you know, there are three ways in which people generally access ebooks. And I'm speaking as a layperson. I'm in no way a techie. I still like my book in hard copy. Yeah. I like to smell the pages. I like to use bookmarks. I like to make bookmarks. But you've got your desktop or your laptop. Some people, you know, or you've got your iPad or your tablet. And then some people also have an e-reader, which is a piece of hardware on its own. Mm. So an e-reading device.
Love my Kindle. Yes.
Yes, and then you also have your smartphone. So your smartphone, you can also download an e-reader app onto your smartphone. If you've got your more high-end smartphones like your Apples and your high-end Huawei, Samsungs, etc., mm-hmm. they come in with a built-in e-reader. Mm-hmm. And then you also have apps that you can download if you have a lower-end smartphone or you want to play around with different kinds of apps. The one that I have is called ReadEra.
ReadEra,
so
yeah.
That's the one that I use to read my ebooks on my phone. And I don't have a tablet, so those with iPads and other kinds of tablets, you can find whatever's compatible with that. I find that a lot of people are enjoying ReadEra because it's not just for ebooks, but you can also read other documents on it. So PDFs, you can read your Word documents on it, mm-hmm. and you can play around. So it plays nicely with other interfaces, and it's free, and you don't have to deal with ads.
Yeah, and some people might say, well, I'm perfectly fine just reading off of my usual screen or my phone as it is. But really what you want to do is have an app that makes for comfortable reading. So eye strain is not a thing. Turning pages is a different experience. And we're also, yes, whilst we're on lockdown, we're going to be staring at screens incessantly. But just be sure to take care of, you know, your eye health as well, headaches, avoiding that tension and that stress.
That is so important, Rufile. You know, you don't want to, after lockdown, having to go and, you know, now fix your eyes, you know, because that's another expense. And what I enjoy about ReadEra is that you've got day mode, you've got night mode, you can choose different fonts, and it's quite easy to use. You don't have to be, you know, a techie. And again, it works across different platforms. And when, you know, if your battery dies or you have to answer the phone and then you go back to it, it marks your page for you. So you don't have to tell it, save my page. It does it for you automatically.
Fantastic.
So I find that quite useful. And then in terms of you know, getting access to free books and audiobooks, one that I'm enjoying is from Free Book Studios. It's called Free Books and Audiobooks. So you don't have to pay for them.
Yeah.
And it's got a lot of classics, both in audio and in text that you can read. So if you want to go back to your classics and school up on that, you can do everything from, and for kids and adults, from The Wizard of Oz to your Dostoevskys to your Jane Austen. So all your sort of classic Western and Eastern European / you know, Soviet literature is there.
Sure. Lovely stuff. Love to see it. Karabo. That's all we have time
just
for.
Quickly,
yeah.
Unfortunately, I'm saying it to everybody. Please, can we try and find African literature in audiobook form? Then I'll be happy.
All right. Fantastic. Thank you so much. And if you do dig up any sources, please hit us up next week, Karabo, and just, yeah, keep us apprised. Yeah?
Will do.
Fantastic.